we are inching closer and closer to real football. The next step, Lance, we'll see this week is the preseason. The Bills kick it off at home against the Carolina Panthers, and we learned a little more this week about what that game will look like, who will be involved, and what that could mean as we analyze the Bills moving forward.
Yeah, we're actually going to see some starters. Josh Allen might play, Catherine. That's a surprise to me. I'm not surprised about the defense. Jim Leonard came out and told us early this week his starters, the ones who were healthy, they're going to be on the field. It's a new scheme, so I expected that. But I mean, Josh Allen playing in the preseason opener, yeah, that wasn't on my bingo card for the preseason.
He is always going to say he's excited to play no matter what, but I think it is. There are other factors this year. You know, the team as a whole is trying to get a better feel for the stadium, to make it their home, what that'll look like. You know, we talked some to Joe Brady and Pete Carmichael about what their roles will look like on game day, where they'll be. And I think just when you look at the laundry list of things that are different for the Bills this year, I can understand them wanting Josh to get a little run at home just to get a better feel for it all.
Yeah, for sure. It's the new stadium. It's a new coaching staff. He's got a new quarterbacks coach. You mentioned Pete Carmichael. He'll be in the booth, at least for the first preseason game. So what does their communication during the game look like? It's just kind of running through their process as an offense. A couple of new players, so that also makes sense. But, you know, finally, after, you know, training camp practices are great and all, but Catherine, it's nice that we actually have a game that we can, it's the next step, right? You can start to write about certain players and there's a lot of competition. And of course, we're going to be keeping an eye on the defense in particular, right?
For sure. I think there's so much to still glean from that, even though they will be vanilla during the preseason, just to kind of keep things spicy for week one, you know, when they really unveil what this defense will look like and understanding that it'll look different week to week. You know, we've heard from multiple coaches, players, how they're not necessarily game planning for the Carolina Panthers. They're more in the process of, let's work on our stuff. Let's focus on us. We always want to win, but that's not really the biggest thing here in the preseason.
Yeah, and I imagine we'll see, you know, Greg Rousseau, Bradley Chubb, Terrell Bernard. Those are probably that group of guys, Christian Benford as well. We probably won't see much of them, I would think, Catherine, maybe a series or two. But I think we're going to see quite a bit of TJ Sanders, Landon Jackson, a lot of these guys that are still battling for roles, because this coaching staff still trying to get a clearer picture of how does Sanders fit? Where is Landon Jackson's best spot? There's just some more of the details that they're trying to hammer down. You know, I spoke to Michael Hoyt earlier this week and not sure if he's going to play yet. Still coming back from that torn Achilles, but he said right now with where they're at in terms of their install, specific roles aren't really being discussed yet. It's okay, we're going to try you here, we'll try you there, and we're going to see where you're comfortable. We're going to see where we're comfortable of you playing, but especially it will be beneficial to see that group against a starting offense. The Panthers are playing their starters. That's what Dave Canales' plan is.
That was exciting for Jim Leonard, who was saying that, you know, you want the ones and the ones playing each other so you can get more of a feel for what that's going to be on game day. You know, that speed, just kind of going up against someone who you haven't seen before and being able to analyze the game in real time. So I think, you know, talked to Greg Rousseau a little today. I thought he had a great practice on Thursday, and he was saying how it's so important to finally go up against another team and they get that taste finally.
Yeah, and as far as the starters, the main guys on both sides of the ball, however you want to put it, Catherine, more likely than not, this is the only time we'll see them in a preseason game, I would think. The Bills have a joint practice next week against the Browns. We'll both be there. That'll be an interesting one. I had a lot of fun covering the one in Chicago last year. And typically, the starters, you know, they play in that joint practice, so they're not in that preseason game. And are you really going to play them in the finale? We'll see how that goes, but there's competition on both sides of the ball. The injuries kind of muddy it a little bit. Now, Joe Brady, we've learned, does not want to tell us much about injuries, especially when he doesn't have to submit an injury report to the league, which, touche, I understand. But there's some guys like, you know, Kenai Walker, the undrafted rookie corner, was somebody that I was looking forward to seeing, but it doesn't seem like he's going to play. There's a few other guys in that bucket, but let's go back and forth. I want to maybe a guy on offense, Catherine, that you're looking forward to seeing this weekend and why. Can be a starter, can be a backup, wherever that person is on the roster.
I don't know if this is too easy then, but I'm going to go DJ Moore.
That's fine.
Okay, then I can pivot. You go first.
It's good. No, it's good. It's good.
I think just, you know, he's been so candid about how that connection with Josh is still developing. I believe it was middle of last week. He told me it was at 84.5%. So I think seeing him, you know, on the field preseason for sure, but more of that real game feel, what does that mean for his chemistry with Josh Allen? And what does that mean for the rest of the offense?
Give me Keon Coleman. I want to see how much he plays in these games. He might play more than you would have expected. I think part of that is special teams. They're trying to decide how many phases that can help him in that area. But it's still a big rest of camp for Coleman. You got Joshua Palmer, who's had a really strong camp. So if we're talking about where these receivers stack up, it's DJ Moore and Khalil Shakir at the top. There's no question about that. And then the roles become a little bit unclear. Palmer's had a really good camp. And when, you know, Catherine, I went back and watched last season, when Palmer, especially early in the season, he looked good. Like, you could see this is somebody who can help them. We're seeing it again in camp. And if he keeps making plays like this, you know, getting Coleman on the field isn't exactly going to be easy. So he's going to have to step up, playing probably with a couple of different quarterbacks. You know, I bet you they're going to be very careful with Moore and Shakir in particular. We'll see how much Palmer plays, but yeah, Coleman, it's, you know, I'm not suggesting that he's not going to make the roster or anything like that, but in terms of earning a role and earning trust and showing how you can help not only in the passing game, but in the run game with your attention to detail, it's time for him to follow through and really show the coaches that he's going to be dialed in every play. Defense, where are you at?
Do you want to go first on defense? So I don't.
Oh, yeah. All right. So you took a starter on defense for offense. I'll do the same for defense. I just want to see Bradley Chubb for a few plays. Yeah. I'm curious. We're not going to see exactly what their plan is for the outside linebackers. We've heard a lot about how Jim Leonard wants to move these guys around, be less predictable. But Chubb, it really does seem like there's some buzz internally about not only him as a player, but a person and what he's brought to that group. One of the newer guys going to play a lot. I want to see him. Because you saw in Miami last year, the guy can still play. Now, if he's healthy, I think he's going to be an upgrade over what Joey Bosa was for that defense.
I'm excited to see him. I'm going to go, though, Caleb Ealamsor.
Yeah.
You know, I think we saw a jump in his physicality just when they put the pads on. So what happens now in a game setting? You know, I think coaches have talked about how he's figuring out that line of, what can I do as a rookie entering the league? What do I still need to figure out? And he's going to make an impact on this defense. So I think just getting to see that next step for a rookie will be really interesting.
Yeah, Jim Leonard said last week, all three of those linebackers, Bernard, Dorian Williams, and Caleb, they're going to have roles. And I think Ealamsor he's going to be too talented to keep off the field, in my opinion. They're going to find different ways to use him. And I'm gonna cheat, Catherine. I'm gonna throw another one out there, and it's T.J. Parker. I mean,
yeah,
among the top, you know, the player being the top draft pick on their team. Not sure if T.J. Parker's gotten any less real publicity, and he's not gonna be a starter right away. I get that. I'm just really curious. I mean, this guy was unbelievable at Clemson 2 years ago. I want to see how they're using him. It's really tough with some of those D linemen, really a lot of the defensive players, Catherine, up to this point, Jim Leonard pointed this out. They can't finish tackles. This is all about finishing. Like, you're not able to touch the quarterback in camp. So your timing's a little bit off. So that's why the offense can be ahead of the defense sometimes. But that's a guy that we haven't been able to see a whole lot of. You know, Ealamsor has made himself noticeable by being in the middle of a couple of different situations in camp, hitting Dalton Kincaid to spark a little bit of a fight. So
so
give me another one on offense. You know,
ooh.
I want Skylar Bell, but I, you know, Skylar Bell would be an easy one, but we might not see him play.
I am interested to keep seeing the growing connection for Lloyd Cushenberry III and Josh Allen, if Connor McGovern is to miss time. Maybe not the spiciest pick offensive line, but I think just, you know, we don't have a timeline for Connor McGovern and just seeing what that looks like when there's actual pressure. That's something I want to keep an eye on because it also impacts the left guard rotation, just kind of, you know, with them trying to navigate a different center. the Bills have been very lucky to avoid injuries at that position. Connor McGovern has played through injuries before, but so if he is going to work his way back a little bit, just what does that look like?
Yeah, Cushenberry was the highest paid center in the league a couple of years ago. This isn't just, it's a luxury to have somebody like him. The Bills kind of did, you know, he's recovering from shoulder surgery this offseason, played for Joe Brady at LSU, so there's a connection there. He kind of fell into their lap, and this is, it's a luxury to have somebody like that who can step in for a center like Connor McGovern. My other one, another offensive lineman, Jude Bowery. Catherine, okay. The rookie off the tackle, you wrote a profile on him following the draft. Believe that published sometime in June or July. Which one was it?
Yes, I think it was June.
Okay. You know, he's somebody that's been talked up quite a bit. You know, Spencer Brown was mentioning on Tuesday how much Bowery's impressed him. Bowery got into one of those scuffles during practice. And you could just see he looks like an NFL offensive tackle. And, you know, they've played him on the left side. They played him on the right side. That's also it. I want to see what some sort of that offensive line rotation looks like. I wouldn't read too much into who's the, you know, the at left guard with the starters, but, you know, who's left tackle, right tackle, who, you know, they need somebody to take on that swing tackle role this year with Ryan Vandermark on, you know, and Alec Anderson possibly being their starting left guard. So who's that going to be? Bowery's a candidate. Tylan Grable's a candidate. That's one of the, you know, other storylines to watch. But for the next segment, Catherine, hey, you and I, we're going to have some preseason to cover on Saturday. We'll be back next week to talk more Bills coming off of that joint practice in Cleveland. You got the preseason game. But Mike Pietro, our sports business reporter, who's been all over stadium coverage for a few years now, is going to join us to give us some insight into what fans are saying, how the team is handling sort of the reaction to that first, really the grand opening to the stadium as a return to blue and red. And, you know, Mike has some great insights to share with us, dive into some reporting. And I wanted to hear, you know, what he had to say about, you know, his first time into that stadium when fans were in the building. Catherine, you and I finally got to see that stadium with it being done for return of the blue and red. But if we're going to talk anything stadium at the Buffalo News, we have to have our sports business reporter, Mike Pietro, join us. And Mike, thank you for taking the time. You've been a little busy for not only the last week or so, but probably the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, truly. It was kind of a surreal moment to be in that stadium. Just, it felt like a fan, you know, for as many times as we were in there, you know, you had that first feeling of going in and really seeing people in there instead of just a bunch of reporters like us, you know, and it was a different sort of feeling to get to see, you know, everyone, what they were doing, how they were reacting, kind of being in awe of almost everything in there. A lot of selfies being taken, a lot of Instagrammable moments in there.
Yeah, no, it was, I'm looking forward to a game. A practice is a different thing, but I think with a practice, it was interesting to see everybody roaming the concourses. That's not something you're going to see when there's actually a game in there. And with everybody roaming the concourses, in some cases seeing their seat for the first time, we got some reaction on both sides of the aisle, didn't we, Catherine?
We sure did. I think that was really the topic du jour of Twitter that day, x.com, if you will. But, you know, it's interesting for us. We, as reporters, we're going there to cover a game. We're in the press box, kind of a different feel than maybe what a fan is going to see. And Mike, you've been talking to more people about, you know, some of these seats, possibly obstructed views and what that means as far as what people were knowing going into that situation. Can you tell us a bit more about just what you've been reporting on that front?
Yeah, I mean, there were definitely some people who came out on social media and were pretty upset about their sight lines in their view to the field. Most of them being people in the 400s, level 400, and being on the more of the aisle, kind of in the first maybe several rows at least in the 400s. And it's basically, you know, a staircase in front of them with a glass casing and some silver railings that are, you know, they're legitimately blocking, you know, some of the action on the field. You know, I actually was up in the 400s for a little while during this, and we, people I was sitting with had the middle seats, and they specifically said that they had went to the Stadium Experience Center and they took a look at it, and you know, they liked the middle seats because there were no obstructions. They looked at the end seats, the aisles, and they saw them there. So you know, it had some definitely some reaction from fans about that. The Bills say that, you know, they only actually spoken to less than 1% of season ticket holders about it, which, you know, equates to maybe 500 or so fans. But there were definitely some people who seemed to be caught by surprise by the whole thing, which is not how it was supposed to be, considering this whole new Stadium Experience Center was set up and you're supposed to virtually see your seat and you're supposed to basically know what you're getting into before you're actually stepping into the stadium.
Did you talk to many people, Mike, who felt surprised or blindsided, or the initial virtual images they were shown didn't really match up with what their actual seat was? And if so, how are the Bills handling this?
You know, I did a lot of reporting from, you know, what we saw on social media. You know, I was at the game, didn't, you know, talk to a few fans, but didn't get to speak with a ton of those who were most upset about it. However, I did speak with the Bills afterward. And, you know, their take on it was that they felt like it had been told to these fans, you know, that there might be some, you know, an obstructed view to their sight line to the field. So they feel like they were made aware of it. And actually, a bunch of these seats, I was told, were actually held until, you know, waitlisters got to go at the end, you know, past all the, you know, old building season ticket holders who all had their chance to get season tickets at the new stadium and buy their seat licenses and whatnot. So some of these seats were actually held back, you know, purposefully, according to the Bills. And, you know, they were clearly told, these fans, that this is why they were held back. Here's your opportunity to buy them. And most of them went pretty quickly, from what I understand.
Mike, when we were talking pre-show, I thought it was so interesting how you're saying, you know, you've been to the stadium throughout this whole process, but this wasn't a part of the concourse or a part of the stadium, rather, that was really part of those tours. Am I right?
Yeah. It's interestingly, yeah, we never got up to the 300 concourse. I had been in the stadium, been on the field numerous times, but never actually to 300 concourses. That I can remember, never saw the 400 seat bowl as, you know, as more of a finished product. I really didn't know what to expect. You know, it's a different sort of seating arrangement to have, you know, the stairway coming up, you know, on the other side of where the seats are, you know. So I never gave it too much of a thought, to be quite honest with you, what it would look like. And I think that may have, because we weren't up there, because there wasn't so many of those video moments that went on from reporters up there, you know, I think a lot of people maybe have, you know, kind of caused some of the surprise of like, wait, this is, you know, kind of what it looks like. Because, you know, if you want to, you know, look at any news stations or us and what we've done and all the stuff, you know, it's a lot of, you know, first level stuff, videos, you know, it's field videos, what it's going to look like from there. But we never got a ton of stuff from up there, from really high in the upper deck.
What feedback have you gotten on the concourses, Mike? I walked around during that practice and I just watched from different standing room only areas to get an idea of what the sight lines were. I mean, that main concourse is massive. It's pretty spacious. And I thought the upper one was pretty good as well, but you didn't have as many spots where that was one of the features you'd heard about. Like, there's going to be areas where you can stand and watch the game with, you know, with food and from the concourse. I know that was one of the points the Bills have raised on why they designed the stadium the way that they did.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the concourses, they're so much bigger now. I thought they were at times actually a little bit tough to navigate because there were so many people, you know, just not in their seats and looking at all the art installations and, you know, everything that the concourses had to offer and just kind of taking it in so many ways. You know, on the first level, I thought there were plenty of spots to kind of, you know, sit, around the bowl or stand around the bowl with your food. You know, it was tough to get in. People wanted to do that. It was actually tough. It was, they were one and two and three rows back to kind of waiting just to kind of get in those spots where they could stand and watch the game, maybe eat some of their food, kind of take that in. You know, to me, maybe I didn't get a great look at all at both concourses as well, because it just, it was hard to get around a little bit because, you know, there were so many photo op moments, you know, where people were sort of standing back, taking up so much room just to get in with the broken folding table or, you know, whatever, you know, art installation they really wanted to see and get a picture with. So like you said, we'll never probably see this again, like the way it was. I mean, being that packed in the concourses. But my first feel for the concourses, and I did stories about this and kind of really tried to focus on this, was that they are the biggest, one of the biggest in my mind, game changers in this whole stadium. Because one of the most, you know, being a sort of a, someone who goes to games, doesn't just, you know, just cover them and in the press box, you know, my biggest frustration at Bills games has always been the concourses, the old building concourses, and being so separated from the action, just feeling so cut off when you're in them. So to me, I think it was the biggest game changer, you know, in this stadium.
Mike, what else stood out to you about the stadium? You know, there's been chatter online about the Jumbotrons, the scoreboards. I think just knowing this was the largest construction project in Western New York history, people are quick to talk about different angles of it. Is there anything else that you've learned from reporting on this that you think people should know?
Yeah, I mean, the video boards were another, you know, point of angst for some fans. And, you know, they just didn't believe that for a new stadium. I mean, we see all, you know, the whole Jerry World and, you know, all these huge video boards at all the new stadiums. And that's sort of, you know, that's the thing to do now, right? To have these huge video boards where, you know, people can take in the action anywhere. If they have an obstructed view, they have no problem looking at the video board. And so I think people were a little underwhelmed by the size of it. And, you know, I spoke with the Bills about that, and they just seem to feel like it is those two video boards on each side of the stadium are a good fit for the size of the stadium. They kind of put it simply like that. They just feel like they were a fit for what the stadium size is. You know, I'm not a big video board person, so I don't mind it personally, but I can see it. I mean, they're for all the video boards that you've seen at the new stadium, these are probably the smallest ones you'll see at any sort of new venue in from what I've seen. So, you know, the video boards were, you know, they were, definitely something people were talking about, but I think on a positive note, like another, you know, thing that people were talking about is the outside of the stadium and the crowds that it brought, you know, family circle, really, at least for that first game or that first practice or first big event, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it really turned into the attraction that the Bills really hoped it would be. I mean, it was packed. It was packed. Everybody was taking pictures. Everybody was asking others to take their families' pictures in front of the Bison. You know, the plaques are around sort of the legend circle. I mean, it was so bustling. I was even shocked as I kind of walked up there just to see how many people were doing it. And you know, people who may not even have been going to the practice were doing, you know, the Highmark Trail. The loop around the stadium, you know, that's got all the sort of Bills related activations and things like that. So people were really, really taking this thing in. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, if that's going to sort of continue, you know, during these games. Is it going to be, you know, something some people do on the side here on a weekday when they have their kid a day off or something like that? So that really stood out to me. I would say this lastly is just, you know, speaking of the concourses and like just how crazy bustling they were, the thing that stuck out to me is like what is in them now and how, you know, how much is in there, how many markets are in there, how you can't walk 10 feet without being able to buy some sort of different food or a beer or a different beverage, or, you know, what a money making sort of revenue machine the stadium has now become with, you know, being able to buy food and bev any retail, any swag that you want. It used to be hard at the old stadium to sort of find something. Maybe you have a little pop-up stand outside or inside. Any retail you want is pretty close by in the stadium. So it is just amazing what a, you know, revenue juggernaut this thing will probably be for the Bills.
Were you surprised at all, Mike, that with the first event happening, that a lot of people are revisiting the topic of how expensive it will be to attend games at this stadium? To me, just being around covering, you know, different professional sports leagues, this is, if a new building opens, it's expensive to go, especially in year one. I think that, I know we saw sticker shock when it was time for the PSL sign up and all that. I guess I'm just surprised that we're having this conversation again, and it's become such a talking point now that it's open and football season's almost here.
Yeah, I think it sort of plays into the whole argument of, you know, the people, the average Joes who aren't going to be able to go to the games anymore. You know, it being, you know, the second smallest market in the NFL, it's a tough pill to swallow to see these studies that are coming out. And then this is the most expensive stadium right now. So it plays into that argument of, you know, it makes it tough for just, you know, you can't pick up and go anymore. I did a recent story about that, about how like fans would go once or twice a year, kind of pick up and go, call friends, meet me for tailgate. That's just not really possible right now with the prices at the stadium. But we have to bear in mind that a lot of these prices are so far up right now because of the expense on the secondary market. You know, obviously people had to pay for the seat licenses, and that's a huge expense for a lot of people, and it you know, is going to impact a lot of people, you know, and sort of the discretionary funds that they have, you know, are able to use. But it's also the secondary market that is just so expensive right now. There's fewer tickets. People want to get in to see it. And that is really just boosting these prices right now. You know, it's not so much the actual price of a ticket for season ticket holders. It's just the secondary market prices right now are through the roof.
To Lance's earlier point, Mike, there's no way we can discuss the stadium without you. So thank you for your time and insight. And just if you're listening, make sure you're reading Mike's coverage on BuffaloNews.com. And Lance and I will be back next week following the Carolina Panthers preseason game to keep rolling with the Bills.
Thanks for having me.